Daniel chapter 4. This fourth chapter of Daniel is Nebuchadnezzar's personal testimony to the world that the fact that God is able to change people, nations, anything. He's able to change men, things. I have divided this fourth chapter into four divisions. If you don't agree, you can divide them in any kind of divisions you want to. Verses, if you want to write these down, verses 1 through 3, I call this the preamble of his testimony. Verses 4 through 18, the dream itself. Verses 19 through 27, the interpretation of the dream. And 28 through 37, the fulfillment of the dream. Verses 1 through 3 is his attitude. And in chapter 3, verse 29, let's go back just a little bit and pick up the attitude of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, "Therefore I made a decree that every people, nation, and language which spake anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort." Now, we notice several things here in this verse. That one, he never called him my God. He called him the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And another thing, his heart wasn't turned away from violence. He still was ready to kill and cut in pieces. This is not a new life at all. So his attitude is changed in this chapter, but not right here. As far as Nebuchadnezzar is concerned, there are a lot of gods. Gods, many. Chapter 247, I might read that. "The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods." So as far as he was concerned, there was a lot of gods. But when I was in India, in Calcutta especially, it seemed like everybody had his own god. There's about as many gods as there were people. So, and they worshipped everything from bugs to candy and whatever happened. Anyway, this seems to be what Nebuchadnezzar is. There's a verse in 1 Corinthians 8:5. Somebody look at it for me. Alan, look at it for me. 1 Corinthians 8:5, where Paul says there's Lord's many and God's many, but there's only one for us, one God. Okay, go ahead, read it.
"For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we in him, one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him."
So there's only one God for us. So when people really know our God, other gods drop away, don't they? 1 Thessalonians 1, the very last verse of 1 Thessalonians 1, says they turn to God from idols to serve the true and living God. They didn't turn from idols to God. They turned to God from idols. In other words, they turned to God first, and the idols fall away, and then they begin to serve. And so this is the outward manifestation of a converted life. If people, so as to say, "Well, I got saved," and you don't see any change and their idols remain the same, then you wonder whether they really have a testimony, whether they really got saved or not. Because God changes lives, doesn't he? And this is the essence of this chapter, the fact that God changes lives and the nations as well. Now, here at Nebuchadnezzar, and we had this statement before, and I bring it again back to our mind, that the outstanding feature of Nebuchadnezzar is, "Thou art this head of gold." Now, as that, he is a representative of the whole image, not only the head of gold, but the silver, the brass, the iron and clay, and even the toes of the image. And so what we're seeing here in this whole chapter is the whole world, all of the world empires illustrated in this one man and the experience that he had. And the nation should take heed to this, by the way, leaders of the nation. All right, let's begin to read. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, unto all people, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. So this letter, or this testimony, is to everyone. All the people, nation, languages that dwell on all of the earth. So this carries us down through a little over 2,600 years of time. And we'll see that as we study on down through there. Even unto this age today that we're living in carries us down through that time. Now, notice the benediction of this. Peace be multiplied unto you. Now, Paul talks about peace in all of his benedictions, grace, mercy, and peace. But the only ones that have peace be multiplied unto you is Peter and Jude. Peter and Jude are writers of a kingdom message of the latter times. So this benediction goes right along with the thought that's being put into this, is bringing it down to last day times and even present times for us today. See, we're not studying this just as history, we're studying this as prophecy. So this benediction is like many of the New Testament benedictions. Then let's go on. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. Now he called the things that God had shown him, he calls them signs and wonders. The word sign could also be translated token, and it's a token of divine authority and power of God, that he causes people to acknowledge him as the Almighty, the might and the power. And everywhere we see that, we see mighty power. When God brought Israel out of Egypt, he used the token of his power to do that. Roberta, look up Psalms 135:5. It shows the work of God as he brought him up out of the land of Egypt. And while she's looking that up, I'm going to turn over to the sixth chapter of Daniel. Look up verse 25. Says, then King Darius wrote unto all the people, nation, and languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is a living God and steadfast forever and ever in his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. So he wrote with the same benediction too, didn't he? Showing them what God could do and the changes and how God could overrule the human race. Let's read Psalms 135:5-9.
For I know that the Lord is great, and that our Lord is above all gods. Whatsoever the Lord pleased, that did he in heaven and in earth, in the seas and all the deep places. He causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings for the rain. He bringeth the wind out of his treasuries. Who smote the firstborn of Egypt, both of man and beast. Who sent tokens and wonders into the midst of thee, O Egypt, unto Pharaoh and upon all the servants. Yeah. Who smote grim.
Well, all these things that he did. But he mentioned Pharaoh. Anyway, he mentioned two there that he smote. And these are called a token. What verse is that? It's called a token.
9.
All right, that's the one I wanted, isn't it? All right, read that.
Who sent tokens and wonders unto the midst of the old Egypt, unto Pharaoh, and upon all the servants.
And this was the hail and all these things that we read of. And then he adds a couple in there that we don't read of in Exodus. But the fact that the things that he did, the flies, the frogs, and all these things, were a token or a sign of his power, of his might. So, and then there's another, Nancy, 2 Corinthians 12:11-12. is another one where Paul states his apostleship, the sign of his apostleship was God's showing his might, God showing his strength. Read that for me.
I am become a fool in glorying. Ye have compelled, for I ought to have been commended for you. For in nothing am I behind the very chiefest apostles, though I be nothing. Truly, the signs of an apostle were wrought among you in all patience, signs, and wonders, and mighty deeds.
Now, the sign of his apostleship, or God's approval of him being apostle, was a fact of signs and wonders. You see, we don't have apostles today. We have evangelists, pastors, and teachers. The apostles were for the early part of the age. They were the foundation offices. Read that in Ephesians, 2:18-19 in there. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 3, I have laid the foundation. Others build thereon. So the sign, though, of his apostleship was God moving, God showing his power and his authority. So this is what Nebuchadnezzar said. He said, how great are thy signs? It's good that to show the signs and the wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. And how great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom and his dominion from generation to generation. So Nebuchadnezzar was to acknowledge good, this king, to be a better king than he is. That's what I'm trying to say. That this king is a better king, more authority, more power, over more people than Nebuchadnezzar is. So he said this was a sign that was given unto him. Verse 4. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourish in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts of my head, thoughts upon my bed, and the visions of my head troubled me. Now, he was at rest in his own home. Chaldean word meaning here is that he had full security, that he felt that he was in a safe place and nothing could harm him, nothing could touch him. He had a beautiful place he had built. It was all his. It was well armed, well guarded. He was safe and he was happy. He was prosperous in his place. So he had nothing to fear whatsoever. No one could touch him. But you see this, as we read in the next chapter, this was really just false security. When people trust in things and put their security in things, it's a false security. You trust in your automobile and you get out to go to work the next morning, it won't start. That's security. You can't put your trust in things or people. And so he was at rest in his house. He said, it flourished in my palace. So this is under this condition that God gave him a dream. He said, I saw a dream which made me afraid. Dreams, notice the difference here between dreams and visions. A dream is while a person is asleep. A vision is when a person is awake. And so as you read this fifth verse, he said that the dream which made me afraid and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. So it seemed like he got the dream when he was asleep. He must have woke up and just laid there, and God continued to show him things while he was awake. When he was asleep, he had fear. This is probably what woke him up. And then as he laid there on his head, God continued to tell him. And the more God told him, the more troubled that actually he became. Another thing I want us to notice, and I don't know, I counted these and forgot how many, but notice the personal pronouns through this testimony. I, me, mine, and so forth. The way that the old creation boasts in the things that they have, and Nebuchadnezzar was no exception to this, but who really gave him all of these things? Who really gave him? Jeremiah 25:9. Sister Lewis, you read that for me. Jeremiah 25:9. And it tells what God had done for Nebuchadnezzar, and it was all him that had done this. I think that's really beautiful in there, how God moved upon the nations. Notice God using the personal pronouns in there. Verse 26. So it was all God, wasn't it, that did these things for Nebuchadnezzar. But who did Nebuchadnezzar give the credit to? And this is the old creation. This is a natural man, the way of doing it. They don't want to admit there's a God. They go to great lengths to try to prove their own abilities to do things. Nebuchadnezzar, I think in the chapters before this, he had to realize that there was a greater power than him that overruled his authority. But did he forget all these things? He must have. And he just forgot God and made him as nothing, made himself a God. And this is the way man does things. They just make themselves something. And Paul wrote in Colossians 3:5, I believe it is, he said that covetousness is idolatry. And so just to want, it seemed like Nebuchadnezzar had everything he could ever want, and yet he wouldn't give God anything. The covetous old creation is never satisfied. So the conditions at the time of this dream, that's what we're saying here, God unfolds two methods of talking to people. One is a dream, another one is a vision. This is the way he talks to a lot of people. But let's remember here that, again, I keep mentioning this fact, but I don't want to forget it, that Nebuchadnezzar is a representative of all the world empire. And man isn't changed today. He's just the same as he always was. Verse 6, therefore I made a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Again, he calls for his guides. Looks like you learned a lesson. I've often wondered about people too. It looks like eventually they learn something. As smart as world rulers are, you'd think that they would learn. It may have been, but I don't know of any president that has got advice from any spiritual leaders at all. When they ask for advice, they ask for advice from ungodly people. No wonder they get this. They don't know. See, the world, these people don't know anything at all about God, God's work, God's plans, God's things, or what he's doing. The rulers think they know, but they don't know spiritual things or spiritual conditions. What is that verse in 1 Corinthians 2? It says, the natural mind, natural man, cannot understand the things of God. It's about verse 20. I'm going to start at verse 19, I think. For eye hath not seen, ear hath not heard, neither it is entered the heart of man the things that God has prepared for them that love him. But we see them through the Spirit, because the Spirit searches all things, yea, the deep things of God. But the natural mind cannot understand the things of God, and neither indeed can be, because they're spiritually discerned. And you can read on down through this chapter and see that the natural mind of man cannot understand God's things at all. So it'd be wise if they call spiritual people for advice, wouldn't it? But they don't. And so they came, the magicians, the astrologers, and the Chaldeans, verse 7, and the soothsayers, and I told of the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation. Well, he gave them a little better than he did before. He didn't even tell them what the dream was before, did he? Mm-hmm. At least he told them what the dream was this time. But they couldn't do anything about it. Verse 8, but at last Daniel came before me. It doesn't seem like he was even invited, but he came anyway. He probably waited till they left because he didn't want to be associated with them, and then came. Now, if he was a leader, if he was put in charge of the whole realm, it looks like he would have called him first, wouldn't he? But he didn't and never did. But last Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar. Notice he used both names here. He used his original name, Daniel, which means God judges, or God is judge. And then he used the Belteshazzar name is the God of treasure. And so this is the name that the world uses. This is what the world sees. And so both names are used in that. It said, according to the name of my God. So that was how Belshazzar got name of Nebuchadnezzar's God. And in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, plural, many gods. And before him I told the dream, saying. So now we have the dream. O Belshazzar, master of magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the vision of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof. I read this. It kind of seemed like he was, what's a good word for that? Snow job? Kind of good word? Kind of patting him on the back here, verse 9, the best I can see there. But we have the vision now and the interpretation. These were the visions on my head and my bed, and I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. And the tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached the heavens, and the sight thereof to the ends of all the earth. Now, trees in a prophetic language and symbolic language usually always speak of people, and usually reigning people all through there, sometimes just people in itself. Let's go back to Alan again. Read Judges. Well, let's don't read that. I'll just tell you about it because there's too much in there. But in the ninth chapter of Judges, they tried to decide who was going to reign. And so they started with the biggest tree. And he says, I'm not going to leave my beauty and reign. And they went down, 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 and all these trees, and ended up with a bramble to reign. But these trees represent kings. They represent someone of authority to reign over the people. And God just used these trees as a type or an example of who was going to reign. Here's a good one we can read, though. Isaiah 55:12. We talk about the trees clapping their hands. Now, we know that trees don't literally do this, don't we? So it has to be a representative thing.
For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands.
See, mountains in prophetic language speak of kingdoms. Hills speak of smaller kingdoms. And the people of these kingdoms will rejoice when Israel comes into their blessing. And that's what it's talking about there, that other nations will be blessed because of them. Then another example of trees. Roberta, read Songs of Solomon 2, verse probably 2 and 3.
As the lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste.
So she is seen as a lily among thorns. He is seen as an apple tree among many other trees. And it's because he was fruitful. Just regular trees aren't fruitful. He was the fruitful one. He was a king that had something going for him. The rest of them were just ordinary trees. So you can see how trees represent kingdoms. And that's all I was trying to do here. And so he saw a tree. This tree was him, but also representative of all the world rulers, every one of them. And this will be the end of them. A tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof was reached into the heaven. And it gets bigger and bigger. As you go down through the age, it grows and grows. Over 2,600 years, it's got stronger and stronger. World empires have. And it's grown to almost a monstrosity. Jesus one time talked about the mustard seed. Such a small thing to begin with. But you plant it and it grows into a huge tree. And the birds, or the vultures, light in the branches thereof. But God never intended us to be trees. He intended us to be wheat. And you don't see very many birds lighting and melting a nest in the branches of wheat, do you? It's too small. It's too little. And so God, when we get too big, then the vultures can get in the branches of this tree. And so how great this tree began. And it become profitable. Notice verse 12. The leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat or food for all. The beasts of the field, the shadow under it, the fowls of the heavens dwelt in the branches or bronc thereof. All flesh was fed of it. How great this tree was. It seemed like not so. It was totally dependent. The nations depended upon it. Other nations, smaller nations, people depended upon it. Many things depended upon Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. And I look at today and how much people depend upon the kingdoms of the world. 100 years ago, right here in the United States, people got out, they built their own cabins, they cleared their own land, and the government didn't have a thing to do with it. There was some homesteading in which the government gave land, this is true. And some, they had a few little rules, nothing like that today. People today are totally dependent upon government, and this should not be so. Anyway, this is what we have in this, especially in this verse 12. And in verse 13 he said, "And I saw in the vision upon my head, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down." This holy one and the watcher. Notice the voice of authority that was given here. The watcher, it seemed like in verse 13 that there's two individual people. But later on, the word watcher comes from the same word of angel or one who guards. Guardian would be a good thought. Anyway, I feel, and I want to put it that way, that this one who had this authority is the pre-incarnated Christ. Now, we read of angels many times through the Old Testament. And most of the time when the authority of God is manifested, it's the pre-incarnated Christ that is shown forth in all this. And I believe that that's what we have here. I try to think of another thought along that line. But in verse 14, notice the singular. He cried aloud as though there were one, and yet there were two. And I think this shows forth the oneness of God's voice, and yet the authority of both the Lord and Christ in this. Great, great authority. And then also mentioned in verse 17. We might turn to, let's see, who read that? Revelation 10, verse 1 through 3. I think we can see the same one, the same authority in there. He puts one foot on the land, and is that in the right place? Go ahead. I'm sure that's right. Revelation 10.
"And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, mm-hmm. clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea, and his left foot upon the earth. And he cried with a loud voice, as when the lion roars. And when he cried, seven thunders uttered their voices."
Notice the power there. He put one foot on the land and one foot on the sea. When you put your foot on something, it shows authority. It shows that you have you conquered it. It's yours. This is the same thought, I believe, as we have here. The authority of God himself seen in the pre-incarnated Christ. Are you still open to that revelation? Well, read verse 5 in there too.
"And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven."
Mm-hmm. The same angel, see. And he swore by himself, because there was none greater to swear by. And so this is the same one, I'm sure. "But he cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree and cut off his branches and shake off his leaves and scatter his fruit and let the beast go get away from under it and it fowls from the branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his root in the earth, and even with the band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of the heaven, and let his portion be with the beast in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from a man's heart, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. As times is years, 7 years to over for this period of testing. This matter is of the decree of the watcher, command of the word of the Holy One. Now here we have that plural again, as well as singular in verse 14. In the midst, to the intent, now this is the purpose, to the intent, that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basis of men. This is odd, isn't it? God's authority. He can do what he will. He raises up people. He can bring people down. And he sets up over the basis of men. People say, oh, we ought to have the best. Well, God says he uses the worst sometimes too. The base, the lowest, the no good of men. And then he says, this dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof. For as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able. Seems like you had some confidence in Daniel, didn't it? Thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods, plural, is in thee. So Daniel now is ready to do something. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour. In other words, he sit there simply amazed, not able to do anything, in utter perplexity for 1 hour. Can you think of somebody just not even speaking, not doing anything for 1 hour? And his thoughts troubled him. And the king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. And Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, the dream is to them that hateth thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. Now this 1 hour is representative of simply a period of time from the time people know the purpose of God and the time that it's exposed, it's brought out in the open. We've had a period of time in which God has just let man do what they want to do. He hasn't corrected man. He hasn't done anything. There was a period of time between Malachi and Matthew that we have very little record of. We have a little in the books of the Maccabees of that time, some of the Apocryphas, but very little record of God even speaking to men at any measure. And I feel that this 1 hour here is a representative of that. But that isn't forever, and pretty soon God's purpose is going to be brought out in the open. Notice another thing in verse 19 is Daniel respected the authority of Nebuchadnezzar. And we should too. God tells us to pray for those in authority over us, in Timothy. He tells us we may not respect the person, but we respect his authority. Just like I'm sure that God didn't think too much of Caesar. I mean, Paul rather didn't think too much of Caesar. But he said, I appeal to Caesar. Because he knew that God wanted him to go to Rome. And this was the best way for him to go. It wasn't that he trusted Caesar or any other authority. But anyway, he trusted the Lord. I noticed that he respected authority here in verse 19. All right, verse 20. The tree thou sawest, which grew, was strong, whose height reached into the heaven, the sight thereof unto all earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof, and in it was meat for all, under the which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heavens had their habitation. It is thou, O king. Now notice how close this phrase is to thou art this head of gold. It is thou, O king, that are grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reached into the heaven, and thy dominion unto the ends of the earth. Now, we can see that more readily today than even then. The ends of the earth was a lot smaller then than the ends of the earth today. I mean, they could just go so far. They still believed the earth was flat at that time, you know. And now we have a much more vast territory to the ends of the earth. So this brings us on down to the last days. Whereas the king saw the watchers and the Holy One coming, and notice the singular there too in verse 23. Whereas the king saw a watcher and a Holy One coming down from heaven, saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump and the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, and the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast of the field until seven times pass over him. In verse 22 especially, we can see how beautiful things were for Nebuchadnezzar. You know, he had built such a great thing, and yet it had all was to fall down to nothing. He built a beautiful, beautiful city. His gardens of Babylon. And so how great this was, but it was going to come tumbling down. And then let's notice in verse 23, it was to be hewed down and destroyed, yet a stump was to be left. It was not all destroyed. The kingdom was still to be there. It was just brought down to nothing, and at a later time, it was to be brought forth again. Then notice, even with a band of iron and brass. Now remember the head of gold? The silver isn't mentioned here, but the brass is mentioned and the iron is mentioned. And also the clay is mentioned in the beasts of the fields or the field. So he brings us down through these kingdoms, and everyone is involved in what God is doing to the nations, and he's going to bring them down to nothing. Now, he did this among all these nations in Rome. Rome was brought down to nothing. It deteriorated. It deteriorated from within. It wasn't conquered. Then, but a stump was left. And just like we see the feet portion of this image, so we see enough left to start a revival of the old Roman Empire. And I think we're living in that time right now, myself, of this revival time in which God is stirring up the clay and the iron and the clay, and getting ready to do a work here. This is the interpretation, O King. See, there was something, this interpretation, O King, this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord the King, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be from the beast of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, until seven times or 7 years shall pass over thee, and until thou know that the Most High rule. Now this is the purpose, that we had this over and over again, that God rules and not man. And this is God's purpose in dealing with the kingdoms ever since Nebuchadnezzar rose up, was to show that God is the Most High. He's the high ruler in the kingdom of men, and give it to whosoever he will. And if men would just realize that God is the ruler of all things, and he's gonna give to whoever he will, and not what people will. And Nebuchadnezzar was to know this. As we read verse 25, it seemed like Nebuchadnezzar became absolutely insane. You know, we have insane asylums for people who are like this, mental institutions and all kinds of things. But they didn't have them back there, and they didn't want to be associated with them, so they just put them out. And that's what they did with Nebuchadnezzar. You would think that his family would have tried to keep him. But this was not the will of God, and God's prophecy would have come to pass and overrule people's feelings. Now, I'm not saying his son and daughters didn't care. I'm not saying that at all. But God's word overruled. And so he lost his mind. He was taken out with a beast. The beast here is not wild beasts. These are domestic beasts. But we notice over in chapter 5, verse 20, in Daniel's dealing with Belshazzar, said, but when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride. You ever see people with a hardened mind? I've read about hardened hearts in the scripture. But this man's head, the mind was hard, stubborn, unmovable. In pride, and was disposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was among the wild ass, or the wild donkeys. Now, these were just like he was, just as stubborn and unruly as Nebuchadnezzar was, so you can see why God would put him in that position. You could break a wild horse, but a wild donkey is almost impossible to break. God brought him into a place like this that he'd be identified with these kind of people. I think he just lost all reason of what things were. He was brought down low and completely submissive, these things. Let's apply this to prophecy. We read in the 13th chapter in Revelation 13 of the beast. There's two beasts mentioned there. One come up out of the sea, one, but the other one out of the earth. This is the false prophet. This is the religious one. Nobody can deny the fact that Nebuchadnezzar was religious. He was a very religious man. No one can deny that different rulers are religious people. We know that Stalin and some of those Russian rulers were not that kind. They were, but religious people aren't necessarily saved people. The Antichrist, it was a religious people. Now we see in the last half of the 19th chapter, when Jesus comes to set up his kingdom, power and the authority to bring this system down to absolutely nothing. Notice the 7 years here. The 7 years of tribulation, comparable in there. There's 70 terrible years, and God says, except the day be shortened, there'd be no flesh left on the earth. God didn't shorten Nebuchadnezzar, but he's going to have to shorten the reality of this. Our people will utterly destroy everything. This is a time given for God's work, his purpose, for people to know and understand, to see his rules and all of these things, that kings will rule again, but they'll rule under a different attitude after Jesus takes his throne. Wouldn't it be wonderful if nations could read this? I doubt if there's a president or a leader in any of the nations that has sat down and read how God brought Nebuchadnezzar down and took his pride away from him. Be good. I doubt if you printed this and sent it to them, I doubt if they'd read it to them. But God changed things. He broke his will and everything. Let's read verse 27. Whereby, O king, let thy counsel be. Now here was just some good advice from Daniel. Let thy counsel be to them, and break off thy sins by righteousness. Now this is the only way sins can be broken off, isn't it? By righteousness. And we know that there's only one way that righteousness can be brought, and that's through the death of the Lord Jesus Christ. Of course, somebody say, well, this is before Christ was born. But nevertheless, he's a representative of all the kingdoms. And today, if they would just read this and let Daniel's counsel be, and they break off their sins by righteousness, if the leaders today would receive Christ as their personal Savior. Now, Nebuchadnezzar could have gone the Jews' way, learned the Jews' God, everlasting living God, begin to offer sacrifices, and God would have seen those sacrifices as Calvary, just like he did of others. He could have changed right then. and thine iniquities by showing mercy. Now the first part of this is inward. The second part of it is outward. The break off thy sins by righteousness. See, this is an inward change. And then the sign, the outward manifestation, the sign of a change inwardly is giving, sharing, isn't it? When people start giving and sharing, we can see that they really love the Lord. This is an outward manifestation of it. Read 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. You study those two chapters. See what the apostle says about giving. All right, he says, showing mercy to the poor. And that's simply sharing with them and helping them and encouraging them. If it be a lengthen of thy tranquility. Yeah, and so God would be able to lengthen this time. But Nebuchadnezzar wasn't about to listen, and he ignored this. And so we read that all this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. God was faithful to his word, and all of this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. Then we read how it happened. Verse 29, at the end of the 12 months, he walked in the palace of the king of Babylon. So God gave him 12 months, a whole year, to change and listen to what Daniel had advised him in verse 27. But he didn't. He didn't listen. He didn't care. There's some verses in Proverbs that I think goes along with this. Well, one in particular, read Ecclesiastes 8:11. This is real interesting. They think that God won't do anything. God waits a while, and that God isn't going to keep his word. But he does keep his word, and he's going to do it. Read that for me.
Because sentence against an evil worker is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of man is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner do evil 100 times, and his days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, which fear before him.
While we're waiting for God to do something, God's going to take care of us. And we're right at that place now, I think, that the world don't think God is going to judge them or punish them. But while we're waiting for God to do something, why, God's going to take care of us. He's not going to let us down. And no matter how things might look, well, the king spake and said, "This is not this the great Babylon that I have built?" Notice the pride built up in this. Proverbs 23:7, I think it says, "Pride cometh before the destruction." 23:7, I believe it is. "Before destruction and haughtiness before." 16. Try 16:18. That's where it is, I think. 16:18. I think that's where it is. Come before.
Yes. "Pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before God."
Yes. This was his attitude in all this. And there's some other verses that we could read. I'm not going to take time to read them. I might just give them to you and let you look them up. In Psalms 9:12, God's going to hear the cry of the humble. 1 Peter 5:5, 1 Corinthians 10:12, Matthew 12:34. There's so many that 34 and 35. I don't know why it's 34 or 35. But anyway, there's so many. It talks about pride of men and how God's dealing with that. Well, God hasn't changed. He's still dealing with pride. He's still dealing with the nations. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken." This is it. I've had it. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. And notice, while he was still talking, God interrupted the king. Think about that, isn't it? Nobody dare interrupt a king. But God can, and he stopped him right there and said, "This is it. I've spoken. It's been spoken." All of this began to happen. Man began to drive him out. Verse 32, "And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be as the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass for 7 years." And we'll talk about these times and times and a half times at a later date. But I want us to see the swiftness of God's judgment. When he starts, it's going to happen. It's going to be had. He said, "Behold, I come quickly." When he starts to come, he's going to do things in a hurry, is the thought that we have in so many of those verses. And so judgment is swift upon the world, and he became as a beast. Now, we might ask the question now, while he's in this condition, who reigned upon the throne while Nebuchadnezzar was crazy? Well, he had a son by the name of Evil-Merodach that was next in line to the throne. He began to reign in 562 B.C., and Nebuchadnezzar had been reigning 44 years at this time. Evil-Merodach didn't reign very long. He only reigned 2 years. God used him while he was reigning. We read in Jeremiah 52, 51. Alan, look that one up for me. Jeremiah 52, 51, that he raised Jehoiachin up during this two-year period and made him, gave him a place of honor there. I can't remember how long he gave him. 31.
And it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in the 25th day of the month, that Evil-Merodach, king of Babylon, in the first year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison.
Now you know about what time that Nebuchadnezzar went crazy, don't you? Pretty well dates his time. He did do some good in that length of time. His brother-in-law murdered him. His sister's husband had him killed. I looked all this up in the encyclopedia, and I'm not sure I can pronounce all these people's names. Nereg Lessart was his name. I'll spell it. Nereg Lessar, the accent is on the I. Nereg Li, the accent's on that I. He reigned just a short time also. Then next, another daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Her husband was named Nitocris, Nitocris. Her son, then, his name was Nabo, accent on the O, Nebo, Nidus, N-I-D-U-S. He began to reign. And he was the father of Belshazzar, which we read in the next chapter. So Belshazzar was not Nebuchadnezzar was not Belshazzar's father. It was a grandfather through his mother. His mother was a daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So there's two daughters that reigned as queen in there, but his youngest daughter was the last queen. Anyway, the kingdom went on without Nebuchadnezzar. I wanted to bring that out because that brings us right into the next chapter. But all the inhabitants of the earth are repute as nothing. Now this is what God wanted him to find out. And he doth according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, why do you do it that way? What doest thou? What are you doing? No one has that authority. People do that today. I've seen people get real angry at God. They have no authority to get angry at God. Who do they think they are anyway? And most of them think that they're better than God. Say, God, you ought to let me be God. I can do things better than you can. Well, at the same time, my reason returning to me, and for the glory of my kingdom and mine honor and brightness returning to me, just like he was before, even better, even more so. And my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and an excellent majesty was added unto me. When God gets through with people, if they'll turn their heart to him, and they'll gain by the trial, they'll gain by the situation. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are true, and his ways, judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to bring down or to abase. Now, this, his new condition, remember he's the head of gold, so he represents this whole thing. Rhea, that his new life represents the kings that will, during the kingdom age, that will turn their life over to God and let the God of Daniel be their God. And you're going to have some. Study the 25th chapter of Matthew and God's judgment on the nations, the latter part of the chapter. And we have good nations and bad nations there.